keep up with what he's up to for USA Today online, usatoday.com. Follow on Twitter. The handle is at George Schroeder. George, how are things in the desert?
Well, they're good. It's like 79 degrees, perfect. I just got done with a run. Beautiful day. Nice to get out of sort of the, I mean, Oklahoma's been fine, but nice to get down to where spring has finally sprung.
I like it. You know, I heard an interview with Mark Few today, and they asked him about playing basketball in a football stadium, which really isn't new. I mean, UCLA and Houston in the old Astrodome in the late 60s, Lucas Oil Stadium, Jerry's World. Is that even a factor anymore? Or because of, you know, the spacious nature, can it still be a factor?
Well, I think it absolutely is. And the last time that Gonzaga, and I may be wrong on this, but the last time I think Gonzaga was in a dome like that was Energy Stadium for the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight a couple years ago. They got beat by Duke when they were a one seed. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about whether that particular building, which, of course, hosted the Final Four last year, the year after that, causes you depth perception problems. I don't really know. Let me put it this way. I think the fans are used to it being in a dome, and I don't, or a football stadium. And I don't think it's a very good product, frankly. I think it'd be much better in a more intimate environment. And by intimate, let's just say your basic 18,000 to 20,000 seat arena. But that's the way it's going to be. I think we're used to that. Are the players used to that? By and large, I don't think they are. Now, these are highly skilled guys. They get their time on the court the day before, and they get some depth perception. You know, they get to sort of work on that, and they're, you know, they're really good at what they do, and so sometimes they knock it down. But it's a lot different than anything they've ever shot on before in their lives, with the exception of that one other time they played in a dome. So I think we're used to it. I'm not sure they are.
Interesting. All right. When Tom Crean was fired as the Indiana coach, I think everybody's eyeballs moved immediately to Westwood and Steve Alford. You know, there were reports it was a done deal because of his history, his family. Then it's like, nope, he's staying. Archie Miller of Dayton heads to IU. I know Miller has a great rep, but you surprised at all that it didn't end up with Alford in Bloomington?
I'm not, actually. Look, I think Alford would have taken the job. It's pretty clear. I mean, that's you know, is it a better job than UCLA? No, it is not a better job than UCLA. I don't. If we started to have an argument here, you know, the kind of argument you have at your favorite Sam's place, over what are the top five jobs in college basketball? I don't think Indiana's in there. Are they in the top 10? I think they probably are near the bottom at this point, because to me, there's a whole lot of what a great history Indiana has versus what a great present Indiana has. So while I think Steve Alford would have taken the job, even though UCLA is a better job, he would have taken it because that's where he's from. He is a Hoosier. He played there. He's from Newcastle. You know, he's a legend. But here's the deal. I don't think Indiana was really interested in him.
Huh.
The other reason I think if you're Alford, you take the job is because the people at UCLA kind of run hot and cold on him. So, it's my understanding he was not really in the mix from the Indiana end of things.
Interesting. That I did not know. We continue with George Schroeder, USA Today. So Kansas, before the Oregon game, I mean, they were in demolition mode. They won by 38, Michigan State by 20, the crazy finish against Purdue. And then, you know, you wrote about that game. And then, of course, you had Oregon, who barely got by Rhode Island, barely got by Michigan. So pregame, what kind of shot did you give Oregon against Kansas? And how surprised were you that it was actually kind of a comfortable win?
I didn't give Oregon a ton of a shot. And it was twofold reasons. One, after the loss of Chris Boucher to the injury, I think a whole lot of people thought probably, but I certainly thought that their ceiling had been lowered some. All year long, you and I have talked about this. I've said I think Oregon can win the whole thing.
Right.
Because you'd watch them play and you go, wow. Hold on a second. Here's a break. I just want to let you know I'm standing outside my hotel and there's a roadrunner running down the road. So I just thought I'd let you know.
Thank you.
We have a little, what would that be, fauna? We have some fauna next to the flora.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I thought that about Oregon until Boucher was hurt. And then the way they played, and I'll give you the Arizona game, which, by the way, they came back and had a shot at. I'll give you the Arizona game when you're devastated that your buddy has been injured and you haven't had time to adjust. But when they struggle in the first couple of rounds, or really the second and third rounds, you're like, I think this maybe is who they are now. They're just not quite the same team as they were. Meanwhile, on the other end, Kansas is just putting it on people, and they look like a different team than they were all year long. And I think I and a lot of other people thought, okay, this is sort of Kansas 2.0. This is what we thought they could be. And so that's how I went into the game. And then Oregon, you know, basically took control of the game and made Kansas look bad all day long. And it was a great performance by the Ducks. And here's the thing. They looked like that team that they looked like at the best parts of their season when Boucher was healthy. Now, can they bottle that and do it again? I don't know. But if they can, they can win the whole thing.
You know, you brought up some great points about, as mentioned, Michigan. You know, they were kind of like a bubble team. They suffered that rough last-second loss to Northwestern, the runway incident. And, you know, while we're focusing mostly on the four that are left, is it kind of worth a moment to acknowledge that that was a heck of a run for Michigan?
Well, yeah, it really was. I mean, in fact, it wasn't just the runway incident. They had started playing better. You know, I think they won 12 out of the last 14 going into the Oregon game. So they had started playing much better before before they even got to the NCAA tournament, before they really even got to the Big Ten tournament, before the plane went off the runway. They had just sort of morphed into a different, better team. And I think when we talk about Oregon not playing great against Michigan, I think that's real. But I also think Michigan was a better team by the time they got into that Sweet 16 than their seed was. And I think it was pretty clear they had become a much better team than sort of their body of work throughout the season. So, yeah, we should appreciate how teams change over the course of a season.
We're talking with George Schroeder of USA Today out there with the Acme people chasing down the Roadrunner.
Yeah, watch out. There's an anvil coming down here, too. So,
you know, your piece that's posted now about back to Oregon, Pat Kilkenny pursuing Mark Few to become the Oregon coach unsuccessfully. I'll tell you what, I was not aware of this. So it was 8 years ago. The Ducks still had a coach that was only a couple years removed from making the Elite Eight. So for folks who haven't caught up, what kind of meeting did they have? And, you know, an odd meeting place, and safe to say it didn't go well for one person.
Well, the backstory on this is, you may remember the first time that Portland, after the NCAA rules changed back, that Portland was able to host an NCAA sub-regional, first and second rounds, hosted by Oregon, was March 2009. So Oregon hosts it. The Ducks have gone 2-16, I think, in Pac-12 play that year. And so they were not involved in postseason play.
No.
And so there was a lot, even though they were only 2 years, a couple years removed from the
Elite Eight.
They'd been in the tournament the year before, but
yep,
they'd gotten bounced in the first round by Mississippi State. It was pretty clear the program was on the downswing, and there was a lot of question about whether or not it was time for Ernie Kent to go. And so I don't know that the trigger was going to get pulled, but I think had Pat Kilkenny, who was the athletic director at the time, had he gotten an indication from Mark Few, yes, I'll take the job, I think they would have made the change. Now, Matthew Knight Arena was under construction. It was going to come online fairly shortly, you know, another year or so
yep,
away. I guess it ended up being about a year and a half away. But so in answer to your question, after Gonzaga, which played in that sub-regional, and Kilkenny as sort of the tournament director or whatever the title is when you're the host institution's athletic director, sat right next to the Gonzaga bench because that's where the tournament director is always seated at the scorer's table, not for any other reason, but it's created this sort of uncomfortable scene whenever Gonzaga played in those first two rounds, because everybody knew what kind of relationship that Mark Few and Pat Kilkenny had, and they knew what the situation might be with Mark Few, and they knew what the situation could be with Ernie Kent. So they get out of the regional, they win, and they go and they lose, I think, to North Carolina in the Sweet 16. And so a few days later, Pat Kilkenny starts driving east on I-84, and Mark Few starts driving south and then west on I-84, and they meet basically in this little park that's beneath, it's kind of up against an underpass or an overpass of I-84 in a little town of Arlington, Oregon. Some of your listeners have driven over it many times and probably have never been off the road there. Patrick Kenny let me know, and I went and looked it up, and he's right, that it's the hometown of Doc Severinsen, the old leader of the Tonight Show band. But they met, and they talked for 2 or 3 hours in Hugh's car. And it did not go well if your goal was to convince him that Oregon was a really good job. And that was Patrick Kenny's goal. And Mark Few insisted that he had a better job at Gonzaga. And Pat Kilkenny told him, this is one of the things that Pat told me that's in the story, that look, you'll never get to the Final Four at Gonzaga. He said Mark did not like that at all and disagreed with him. And then he also said, but if you come to Oregon with the resources that we're about to pour into basketball and being in what was then the Pac-10, you can get to the Final Four. And he said, Mark, you disagreed with him on that, too. And the best part about that is, here we are sitting here today, and they're both wrong.
That's unbelievable. By the way, great Doc Severinsen reference. Unbelievable. You know, and George, in pro sports, when a trade is made, sometimes you look at it and it was like, wow, that worked out for both teams. In this case, the programs, with Few staying there. You mentioned Dana Altman coming here. And right. I don't know, in other sports, maybe at the professional level, maybe even in college football, you've got to win the title. But for a coach like Few, just getting to the Final Four, I mean, how big of a monkey is that off his back?
Well, he'll pretend like he's not one at all and that he's not defined by that. And maybe he feels that way, but I think there is a big monkey off his back. There's definitely one off the back of the program because they had morphed from sort of mid-major darling. And look, Mark Few, if he were listening, would hate the fact that I just called them a mid-major. But it is what it is. You're not in the Power 5 or if you want to call it the Power 6 in basketball and add the Big East in there.
Yep.
They'd morphed from sort of this March darling, a Cinderella story, into this sort of staple of March, into sort of a, you know what, I'm not really sure that they're not, their reputation isn't bigger than what they really are. And that's what they sort of morphed into. And none of that was really fair because they've been really, really good for a lot of years. Now, I do think they were probably not as good. Like a couple years ago when they were the one seed, they clearly weren't as just sort of physically talented as the Duke team they ran into in Houston. I actually covered that Elite Eight game.
Yep.
But they've been really good, so it was unfair. But because we are sort of a results-oriented society, I think it's a huge deal to get to the Final Four. And what's interesting about that is, in basketball, getting to the Final Four is the thing. Now you want to win a national title. There's no question Gonzaga wants to win a national title, Oregon wants to, South Carolina wants to. The only team out of that group that's going to be really disappointed if they don't win one, quite frankly, that they're going to think their season was a failure, is North Carolina.
Right.
But getting to the Final Four is a huge step for a program like Gonzaga and for Oregon, too. To me, South Carolina feels kind of like a one-hit wonder. Everything worked out really well. The other two programs, you know, Oregon's going to struggle at times because of how good the Pac-12 can be. But the other two programs can really build off of this potentially and take it to the next level potentially. North Carolina, obviously, are already there.
Yeah. 20 Final Fours will do that. The final thought here, part of your story about Kilkenny, and to tell you the truth, I remember the people were following like the tail numbers on private planes.
Right, in 2010, the year later, right, yeah.
Yeah. So in the end, though, who were some of the guys he met with, and who was the one that actually made the recommendation that he landed the guy who has now taken this program places nobody ever dreamed?
Well, hey, I will say this. Steve, you're great about doing this, and I appreciate it, but I'll say this. Go to usatoday.com and check out the story. It's actually kind of a cool story.
It's sort of a
neat chapter. It's not just about the meeting, you know, with Few in 09. It's about a little bit about what Pat Kilkenny then did a year later when he went and made the search, even when he wasn't AD, actually, but made the search 39 days for a new head coach after they did finally part ways with Ernie Kent. And to answer your question, they met with a bunch of big names. They talked terms with Tom Izzo in Fort Wayne, Indiana. I mean, that's a pretty big deal to get a chance to talk to him. Now, he ended up not being interested. They certainly would have given him the job had he been. They talked terms with Jamie Dixon, then at Pittsburgh, now at TCU, his alma mater. That would have been a huge hire. They talked with a bunch of other guys who were less interested. They wanted to talk with Brad Stevens, but that was the year that Butler went, sort of blew up into what Butler became and got to the Final Four. And he went from sort of a pretty cool, hot name to probably out of Oregon's league at that time.
Right.
And they talked with some other guys who really weren't interested, other than they thought Nike's going to spend a lot of money for this job, and if I go talk with them, I'll make more money at my own job. And they found out that the Oregon job wasn't as attractive nationally as they thought it was.
Right.
But one name just kind of popped up two or three different times during Pat's search, and it was Dana Altman. And when he went to Vegas to try to pry Lon Kruger, who's now at Oklahoma, was at UNLV, out of Vegas, and Lon said, you know, I can't leave, I appreciate it, but you've got to talk to Dana Altman. He's a lot like me, just 7 or 8 years younger. That's when it began to resonate. And eventually, Pat met with Dana Altman, and the rest is history, and they've got the best coach they could possibly have, one of the top two or three X's and O's build the program coaches in the game.
Again, USAtoday.com. It was, George, you do great work, but considering the timeliness, this was awesome. I really enjoyed it. I appreciate you taking time to outrun the Roadrunners and join us. I will be, by the way, gunning for you because I'm on a plane in the morning heading down to Phoenix, so pretty excited about that.
That's cool. Yep. Right, we'll have to grab some breakfast or lunch or dinner or something.
Awesome. George, always appreciate your great time and insight. Enjoy, and we'll see you tomorrow.
All right. Hey, thank you.
Take it easy.